Welcome back to the Ride and Laugh podcast. If you love mountain biking, you are in the right place. Picture your last really fun group ride. You're back at the parking lot. Everyone's stoked. You're talking about trails, tech, progression, nutrition. That's what we do here every week on the Ride and Laugh podcast. We're talking bikes. Let's drop in. Sage, how are you today?
I am doing amazing. I was so inspired last week. We were talking about Allaire. I started going through all the footage, and I think I got enough to put a destination ride up. So be on the lookout for that. That is, it's turning out really, really nice. And also, big news, we hit 1,000 downloads on the podcast platform. It's
Hey-o.
Huge.
It's happening.
Yes. It's happening.
That's awesome. It's so cool that people are resonating with the pod and enjoying it. Yeah. And whether they're getting something out of it or just laughing or a little bit of both. We're super stoked to be making it, and the feedback has been awesome. So just gratitude. Thank you everyone for listening and rating and subscribing and telling your friends about it. It's really cool, and we are going to make lots and lots more and keep on riding and laughing. So cool, good stuff, and looking forward to the Allaire video. I haven't been to that place, so I'm gonna check it out and maybe determine whether or not that's a place I want to go. But if you haven't seen the Trail Sage videos, definitely check out the Trail Sage channel, and you get to see Sage ride with multiple people. There's a lot of Lanky D, one of his many nicknames for me, but there's a lot of other really talented riders as well, and much more talented riders as well. So, and I know that you rode with Brian on that ride, so I'm sure things got steezy. So looking forward to seeing that one. All right. Well, we got a lot of feedback and comments on our last pod, which was the fitness primer. And we had planned on touching a lot more about fitness. And really, we kind of like got into the cardio aspect and ran out of time. There's still so much more to talk about as far as strength training and technique. And I mean, there's just endless really cool subjects, and you can deep dive into any of these sorts of things.
Wanted
to get some of the feedback on the fitness pod. Our buddy Chris Garland heard our comment about the specialized brain. We were wondering if the specialized brain still exists how long ago it went away. And he wrote, he was like, no, my 2021 bike had it. And I think, did you say that you looked up a specialized and you can still get it?
Yes, I looked it up and it's still available. It's only available on one bike though. I think it's like the Epic, which I think is like their cross country race bike, but they're still offering it.
Yeah. So Chris said it was in the front and the back. I'm still not really sure what it does. I guess I could have asked Chris. Chris is a friend of ours, so I could have just texted him like, what does it do? He said when it works great, but it needs to be serviced like really very stringently every year. And if it doesn't work, apparently it's quite annoying. So that was very interesting. Thank you, Chris. Chris, also hilarious dude, really good rider, coming back from an injury. So we wish you well, Chris. And then Christian at Go Bike Yourself, talking about the fitness pod, was surprised, as am I, that running doesn't burn your legs out more for biking. He does a lot of cross training with winter sports, so he's also kind of in that cross training spot. But I thought what I thought was really interesting about his comment, and he had a few really good points, was the mental health part of it. And that when he's not able to work out mentally, he gets upset that he's, and I feel the same way. Like I've conditioned myself and I like to move. I have a desk job. My day job is pretty much sitting at a desk. I get up and go for some walks and that sort of thing, but it's not physical labor. And I feel like if I don't get to work out in the morning and really move and push myself that I'm missing something. And then there's also like that sense of accomplishment at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Do you feel the same way?
Yeah. You know, it's almost like, it's funny because when you first start to work out, and you start to build a routine, it's like, I don't feel like, fill in the blank, running, biking, whatever it is, I don't feel like it. Man, after you get about a month or two into it, that starts to transition. And when you build that routine and you don't get to ride or run or whatever it is that you do, it really gets you down. Like when it rains for me, I get really kind of down that I didn't get to get these endorphins out. And Christian also made another really good point about the running. And that is when you first start to run, you're going to obviously be sore. And so you know, if you do pick up running, you know, and you're like, well, Sage said this isn't using the same muscles. Why am I? So, well, you know, you have to get used to running. And so I guess my point is, once you get used to running, you know, you build up a good form, I think you will find that the muscles are different. They're different enough that they don't affect me when I ride. I mean, I did that huge, what was it, like hill workout right before our Sunday ride, and I was perfectly fine.
Amazing. Amazing. I mean, just really, really incredible and very cool, because if I wanted to do like a big trainer road ride on Saturday and then go for a ride on Sunday, it would absolutely affect me. Yeah. So that you have found a sport where you say, this doesn't affect me. And Christian did touch on that in his comment, that when he starts running, he's sore. But then if he sticks with it, he does right. so much cross training, it's hard to stick with it. But if he does stick with it, that his legs do adapt and he does feel stronger. So, yeah, I would think that running uses your legs and cycling uses your legs, but apparently in a different way, in different types of muscles or muscle fibers. And so you're clearly getting away with it. And that's cool. Regarding the mental aspect of training, and I feel like there's a pod coming on about this one, because when I hear people talk about not being able to work out or not being able to start a fitness routine, like that doesn't just really mesh with me, you know. Like, I mean, that's fine. That's their reality. That's their experience. I'm just saying, I don't really understand it, because I have the opposite problem. Like, I have a problem not working out. You know, I'm constantly overdoing it. I'm constantly like kind of like dipping my toe into overtraining, because I don't like getting up in the morning and just going to work. Like, I want to work out. It feels good. Yeah. And so there's all those reasons behind, and you know, part of that might be the endorphins, you know, and so there might be actual chemical reason in there, and just maybe how I've conditioned myself. But
you know what though, Danny, a question for you. When you had all that time off from your face injury, I mean, that was a significant amount of time off. Did you struggle to get back into routine?
No, not at all.
Yeah, you were itching to go.
I fell right back into it. I have my workout routine, and I was completely off, and I had to be. And the doctors told me that I couldn't start doing anything except for walk. They said I could walk. And even then they were like, you know, not too fast. And I walked all the time. I mean, I was probably putting down like 6-7 miles just a day, just getting out and walking. But once I got like the green light to start training again, I was on, and I jumped right back into it.
I'm often talking to my buddy Anthony, and he was telling me he's struggling to get back. He had broken his, I think it was his toe. And he's struggling to get back into running. And, you know, you and I are pretty motivated individuals in the sense that everything's for that Sunday ride, you know. And it's like, I don't want to not train, because I have to keep up with you. Like, I feel terrible if I'm the guy holding up the ride, you know. And I think none of us want to be that guy that's holding up the other guy. And so that's pretty good motivation, you know, in addition to like feeling good as well. But I was thinking about what Anthony said, and I struggle with that same thing. It took me forever to start lifting again. Remember, I had separated my shoulder. It was a pretty bad one. And I had stopped lifting, and I could not get started. I'm into like week 3 or 4 at this point. So I've kind of like starting to build a routine where I'm not going into it like, ugh, I got to lift. No, I'm like not excited about it, but I'm like, okay, you know, I'm starting to see the results. But yeah, it took me quite a while to get started, Danny, just to take that first step, you know?
Yeah. There's so much to unpack there, but
yeah.
How much do you believe that lifting is going to be good for you and good for your riding? You know, how much do you believe that having more muscle mass on you is going to make you a better rider or better or stronger on Sundays? So I guess I'll just let you answer. Let me ask you a question, and then I'll continue to filibust while you sit there and look pretty without a hat today, ladies and gentlemen. If you're listening on a podcast and you've ever wondered what Sage's head looks like, it's beautiful. Very handsome man. you're gonna have to go home on the YouTube and be like, sorry, honey, I got to see this dude's face now. I got to see this dude's head. I mean, very curious what's happening. Still don't know what Danny's packing under that hat. Not much, I'll tell you.
The dome.
Yeah, yeah. There'd be a glare for sure. Yeah.
Regarding your question, it's a really good point because I know I have to lift, you know, because one of the things that the doctor said, I didn't get the surgery. He said, I didn't need it, but my collarbone, I guess that is, it sticks up. Like it literally sticks up. And he said, it's susceptible to a break. And if it breaks, then you are going to need surgery. So he's like, you have to build up muscle up around there. Mm. So, you know, I know I have to do it, but I don't want to.
That's your primary motivation? That's your primary motivation?
No, primary motivation is, you know, I do certain things that help with mountain biking, like certain exercises that help with that mountain
biking. Your next bib picture? Yes.
And then I have to also look good. You know, I do. There is a vanity part of it. You know, it was like,
sure,
just looking in the mirror afterwards and just like, okay, all right. You know, I'm kind of happy with the way that I'm looking. I'm starting to fill out. I do a lot of fasting. And so I tend to like not have too much fat on my body, but I look not toned.
No, you're lean.
I like to have that. Yeah. Yeah. I'm lean. That's a good word. So building that muscle helps to fill out my body a little bit so that, you know, there's that vanity portion of it too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a side effect of lifting weights is that you look better. I mean, you look like a more fit human being, which is attractive and, you know, so. Yeah. But I it doesn't sound to me like you're like really convinced of the benefits of having muscle. And we'll touch on that because we'll do a strength training podcast. And we'll touch on that and I'll read more so I can come in with some more science specifically. But having muscle is so important in general, let alone as we age and keeping muscle. And then once you have that muscle, you don't want to be able to lift weights to keep it. But you also want to be able to eat right to keep it.
Yeah.
I did want to talk about one more viewer or listener response. Sage has been putting out these hot take videos, which are just like little 3 or 4 minute clips of the podcast. And they're really fun and entertaining. So hopefully you're subscribed to the YouTube channel if you're listening. But if you're not, subscribe and click that little bell and you'll get notifications when these little videos come out. And then there's a whole new set of comments on the videos, which is really cool. So on one of the single speed hot take videos, we had Sean Pritchard, who said that he's 62 years young. Love the way he framed that. He's got a rigid steel single speed, 13 plus years, no knee problems. He's the suspension. And then he talks about the chain that he likes, which is an Izumi track chain. But I thought the cool thing was that he's 62 years young and he's been riding a rigid single speed for 13 years and he has no knee problems. So, you know, we talked about that. Like, does it wear you out? And I guess just what we were kind of just saying, if you're building all that muscle and connective tissue around your knee joints and you're getting the collagen in your diet and that sort of thing, I don't know that Sean is, but sounds like it, you know, and that's just really cool. Plus 62. I mean, rock on.
I mean, Tom Duravchuk, like he's another guy, you know, still rocking the single speed. That's all he rides, you know, and at Mount Penn, no less.
I mean, that bike's gotta be 12 years old?
Yeah, but he makes it work, man. At least. He makes it work.
He does. He does. Beast. He's awesome.
Yeah.
I love Tom. And we run into him at Mount Penn quite often. And he's retired and loving life and just great dude. Supporter of Trail Sage, supporter of Ride and Laugh. Thank you, Tom. So I know we rode together at Mount Penn on Sunday. That was that's the ride that we're going to talk about today. Was there another ride that you did, or did you just get some runs and a road ride week?
No, that was it. I the Lair ride was the week before. So yeah, the Mount Penn ride is what we had. But man, what a ride. Holy moly.
It was a great ride. And I'm not sure that I'm gonna hit it in order. So funny. It was one of those rides where afterwards I was just thinking about all the things that we did and I was so stoked. You know, and there was definitely a few highlights. I would say one of the highlights is that all those skinnies started popping up in Mount Penn. We rode them that Sunday, and then we did the episode on riding skinnies, and that's gotten a lot of really good feedback, and yes. And that's a really fun episode to watch. So if you haven't seen that one, go back and check that out. But now we started riding the skinnies that are just now they're there, and so now we know they're there, and so we're starting to ride some of these really difficult ones multiple times. And so we did the teeter totter one. You got it the first try right away.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And then you went back to do it, what, for the camera? And it took you like four tries after that.
You know what, though? That fits right it fits right into my ethos, which is like, I don't like to think about things. You know, when I did it right in the flow of the ride, I didn't think about it. It just happened. And then you were like, well, let's get it on camera. And I was like, oh, okay. So then I went back to the top and then I started thinking about things. You know, like, yeah. Oh, I want to do this a little bit better and blah, blah. Yeah. That was it, you know, and then it took me another three tries to get it. So, yeah,
eight riders had stopped and was now looking and cheering. And so,
yes, Evan, that didn't our man
help. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, including Evan. Yeah. So all these people were watching. And then Evan was just riding whatever line you weren't riding because there's three lines there. Yeah. So whatever you were on, he was on the other one, of course, with no problem, like doing nose wheelies off of the thing. Like, he's
so just, talented.
He's just incredible. Yeah. Yeah.
And Logan, too. Logan was there.
Yes. But I didn't see him ride the skinny.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think he's a tech guy. I think he's like
he's not a jump guy. But anytime that we've talked him into riding tech, he's been really good at it. So,
oh my god, he's so good.
I think he's good at whatever he wants to be good at. But yeah, so that was really cool. I got that teeter totter skinny the second go through, which I was really happy with. The first one I was just going way too slow, but I was happy to get it the second time. I mean, the first time that I did it, it was like what, 8 run-ups and 7 bales, you know, so I was pretty stoked on that. But the one that we both got, I got 90% of it, but the one that we both got that we hadn't gotten before, including Steck, was this one that's low consequence. It's on the ground, but it is like kind of twisty and it goes up at one point. It's really hard.
It really is. Yeah. No consequence, but
and
it is.
You came really close to getting it the first day that we were there, but didn't. And then this time, again, I think maybe you missed it once and then nailed it. And then Stick right behind you. And I was like, damn, now I got to get it.
Yo, Stick. I don't think, were you filming? Because like he was literally came right after me. And I was just like, I turned around. He was right there. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Yeah, oh, that dude was on fire that day.
I got to tell everybody, I watched a video. I wish I could give credit. I'll have to look up what it was. It's this guy who teaches in British Columbia. I forget the name of the video, but he said on skinnies, lean forward, get your weight a little bit forward. You want to weight your front wheel a little bit, and that'll give you a little bit more control. And when you and Stick were talking, or especially you were talking about feathering your brakes and kind of like riding the brake, he said to do that with your rear brake only. So you're leaned slightly forward and you're only feathering the rear brake. Mm. Whether or not that helped, I don't know, but I did that on every skinny we rode. And it's going to be a combination of being more comfortable because we're riding more skinnies now because they're there. And maybe technique, but it felt really good. So listener, give that a shot. Let us know. Lean a little bit forward. And I think he said that really works in tech also. Slow speed tech. Because it just gives you more control on the front of the bike. Makes sense, right?
Do you remember John Hilburn from back in the day?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
That dude was before his time. When he was riding with us, he was before his time. I remember he gave me one piece of advice and it stuck with me for many, many years. And that was on tech and all kinds of stuff, just anything in general, you don't want to be in the front of your bike. And the reason why is it helps you to keep the wheel straight. Now, the part where that doesn't make sense is when you're turning. Because like if you really want to get into turning, especially flat turns, you have to dip your elbow into it and kind of commit to it, which is very scary. But if you're on a downhill or something like that, he always said, not keep your arms straight. Obviously, that would be terrible if you locked your arms out. But he said that he stretches out his arms quite a bit, and that helps to keep the wheel straight. And if you lean over too far, then your front tire gets squiggly. And I kind of experimented with that for a long time, and I kind of feel like he's right. And I'm wondering if that's why I stand up so much. Like, you're always saying I don't get low until I need to get low. And that's the thing. Like, I often change my height, you know, where, you know, if I need to get low, I get low, but I'm pretty upright a lot of the time. And I wonder if that's where that came from. But I also think it really works well. It's kind of strange, right?
I have no idea what you're talking about right now. So, yeah, if you go too far forward, then, I mean, making the bike go in a straight line has not been a problem for me. So I'm talking about like a very slight weight forward. I'm not talking about like leaning forward on the bike. And then as far as your altitude on the bike, like I don't understand altitude. How you can be so upright. I don't understand how you're so upright. I get so low. So we haven't talked about this yet, really, but I got an action camera. So there's footage from it. We're gonna put it in the pod about the action camera that Sage really pretty much was like, this is the one that you should get. And I was like, okay. But when I get into my attack position, I'm so low that oftentimes you can only see the top tube of the bike.
So that's like, right.
You know, the camera looks perfect. And then we get into a cool downhill and you're just staring at the top tube of the bike. You're pretty much staring straight down like that. You want the rider in front of you in it. But I guess that's how low I get. And I really conditioned myself to be that low. How you stay that upright. I look at the videos of you jumping and dirt jumpers, you see, I mean, people doing tricks and stuff like that. Like, they're upright. I mean, they're all over the place. So you just have incredibly really good instinctive balance. And you're also really good at doing skinnies with whatever you're already doing instinctively. But for a cognitive, shall we say, a cognitive rider such as me and like probably 80% of our audience, we need tips, we need tricks. And that's why, you know, and so I'm like always watching YouTube and I'm always reading articles and absorbing this information, listening to podcasts and absorbing this information. And so, you know, unless you're just instinctively good at riding skinnies like you are, and I don't know that you could tell. You had some really good tips on how to ride skinnies, like and why you're good at that, you know. And from a mental standpoint, like as far as what's the best that can happen, and not looking at the negative, and feathering the brake, and keeping your momentum going. You talk to yourself also. I hear you talking to yourself. But as far as like just the straight up technique, I thought that getting a little bit of weight on my front tire helped. Maybe, you know, maybe it just distracted my brain enough to not panic because I was doing something, but it felt like it was helping on the long skinnies. You know, there's some lower consequence, really long skinnies that we rode and that are now at Mount Penn. And the longer it is, the more time you have to panic. So to me, it felt like it helped a little bit. It gives you a little bit more control on the front wheel. You know, does it really matter? I mean, I think being centered is always probably ideal. But I thought it was an interesting tip. I thought it helped. I didn't mean to talk about it this long, but okay. I thought it was helpful. I'm glad we talked about your altitude again, though, because that's a subject I could talk about all day. I don't understand your altitude adjustments on that bike. I wish I could ride like that. All right, so we did the skinnies. Then we come up on, there's a trail called Boom Sauce at Mount Penn, which is a relatively new jump line. It's got some tabletops in the beginning and it's just really, really well built. And then at the middle portion of it, it goes into rollers. And there's two doubles that last spring we decided, hey, let's see if we can clear these doubles. And we've never really, you know, we're still new at jumping, especially Sage. But we'd never really jumped doubles before. Not like that. Not like these rollers where they feel like you could pump track them or jump them. So we spent like quite a while learning that. But we figured it out. We got the right speed and we got the confidence. And now we roll through there. We always jump those doubles.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for people that are getting into mountain bike that don't know, a double is basically picture like two humps. And so instead of pumping the two humps, you basically create a gap jump. And so the way that Boom Sauce is laid out there are four humps before the first berm. And so what you can do is you can double those jumps up so that you're doing two gap jumps instead of
if you don't feel humping like humping four times, you can just double and jump over them instead. Skip the humping, get right to the berm. You know what I'm saying? If you're more of a turn guy, you can stay away from those humps. You just skip those humps, get right into that berm.
Oh my Lord. Oh. A boom sauce. Back to boom sauce. So there are two named. Sets. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. There are two sets of these on the top side. And then the second half, or I guess it would be the third half, because the first half is really the start of Classic Pen, which is like has a tabletop jump.
You
right?
have a third half. You sound like my kids talking about a baseball game. You know, how many points are scored? It's called runs. Half. You're right.
The third quadrant, the third
quarter
section quarter
the third quarter, quarter? No, this is bad. No, because you could have four quarters, right?
I'm
not saying it's the period. Last quarter was the third quarter, because then now we're talking about a hockey game. I think quadrant would have to be four, quarters would have to be four, section, I mean, are we gonna say there's sections. Four, are we gonna go with four, are we gonna go with four, three. Or do you want to just go with section?
I guess there are four sections, though, because if you start at the very top with the Classic Pen slab, I mean, that's four sections.
Boom sauce. That's not boom sauce. Yeah. No, the top is the first berm. The first berm. Okay. Yeah. And then you have the tabletops. That's the first section. The second section is the orchard with the doubles that we're talking about right now. Into, that's right. And then the third section is after you go off into the bigger doubles that we're going to talk about in a moment. You know, there's a natural stopping points. And so there, let's say three. All right. Let's say there's,
we'll say three.
Three. So we have to say three sections. We can't say three quarters. That would be just as dumb as three halves. I didn't know this was a math podcast. Well, I thought you guys were going to be talking about bikes. I mean, what is this?
Three halves.
If I wanted to do trigonometry, I would be in math class right now. Fast forward. Can we get back to the humping? All right. I totally lost where we are. Okay. So you were explaining what doubles are for anyone who doesn't know. And I'm sure that's completely clarified now. All right. Continue. You know where you are?
Yes. Yes. So after you get done the second section, the last section has, I think it's like two berms of tabletop, and then it goes into much larger doubles. And man, Danny, you and I, the last couple times that we've been down boom sauce, we kept thinking, I think we can do these. I think we can clear them. And we weren't thinking that the first time we rolled through. We were just like, whoa, it's uncomfortable.
I remember seeing video of Stefan riding them and some of the guys when they first built it, and they were jumping the doubles, and I was just like, what?
Yeah.
And then we would approach them at speed, it would be like, oh, this feels doable. And then when you would roll over it, and it didn't feel right. And then when I would look at it from the side, I was like, no, this is huge. Yeah, and Stick actually walked between, and he claims that he has an exact 12-inch foot, and so that his feet measurements is precise. He has a royal foot of England, and so his foot is actually a royal foot. So he said with a totally straight face how many feet was in between those two humps. And he was like, it's 12 inches. My foot's exactly 12 inches. And I was like, okay, as long as we're still talking about feet here, I'm not sure exactly where this is going. What did he say? It was 16 feet or 17 feet?
I think he did say that. Yeah. Yeah. They're pretty big. And
they are big. And we thought the second one was much bigger, but he said it was the same. And that kind of helped mentally. So, continue. You got into your, oh, that's true. All right. So you got into your head that you thought today was the day, or you've been visualizing this. I mean, walk me through your process here.
Yeah, Danny, you know what? It actually came down to frustration. We had done that line. it's actually, the humps are so big.
Frustration.
Yes, it the humps are so big that it's uncomfortable to pump it. Like it wants to send you in the air. Yeah, so you have to actually brake in order to do the humps. And that frustrated the crap out of me because it ruins that whole line. And so, you know, after doing all the jumps at Ceres and, you know, the Frederick jumps and all these things that you and I have been doing, we're getting more comfortable in the air.
The Danes flow around jumps that those are doubles.
Yeah.
You were small, but high speed that you have to boost kind of doubles.
And they're long.
That's what we talked about last week. I was like, if you're clearing all those, then you are boosting and you kind of know how to jump. So, okay. So I understand the frustration now. It wasn't frustration that you weren't jumping them. It was frustration that that's the way to ride them and that the trail, we weren't really appreciating that portion of the trail.
Yeah, you're basically ruining that run. You like, instead of ending it on a high, you're ending it on like a, you know, it's just like absolutely terrible. You know,
that's not the way you want to do humps. If you're making that noise, you're doing it wrong. You want to be hooting and hollering. You want to jump over those humps. Woo! Not a, that's a very good point. How to know you're doing humps wrong. I think you'll know. You know what? You'll know. Yeah. You don't need us to tell you.
You know when you're humping right. Absolutely.
Yeah. It won't feel right. My wife could probably give you some good examples of someone that does poor humping. You know what? Edit that out.
Cut.
Cut. Yeah. I have a pump track in the backyard, people. Keep your minds out of the gutter. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. We're talking about the pump track. Come on. Jeez, people. You and I had been talking about doubling these things for the last two or three rides going down Boom Sauce. And that day was just so perfect. The trails were mint. We were feeling pretty good. We had already done several things before we got to Boom Sauce. And I just thought, why not? The weather's good. We're feeling good. You know, it's one thing when it's cold and you're like, oh, I don't want a session right now. I'm freezing. No, it was a perfect day. Perfect day for it.
True. Yeah. Good points. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And yeah. So you started looking at it and you started doing like your pre-ride kind of mantras and routine of stomping on the feature and running up to it and psyching yourself up. And I was just watching and I was like, I think I'm going to do it. Like, if you want to do it, like, I'm not feeling it today. So if you want to do it, go ahead. But they looked really big to me. And I was just kind of planning on watching, which is kind of becoming a theme here that, you know, I'm like, I don't think so. And then you do it. And then I'm like, okay, well, maybe I'll try it. So it was really interesting. But yeah, you totally took the lead on that. And I guess I didn't talk you out of it. Like, you just knew that you could do it.
Yeah.
And so you started messing around with it. And what was the experience?
Man, I cased it bad. I cased it bad, but that was actually a good thing. it was really, because I guess the fear there is like, well, what happens if you don't clear it? You know, and I did not clear it, you know, and I was just like, I'm okay. I made it out.
Yes.
And part of you and I had talked about this, but the doubles are so close together that we were worried that if you landed in the middle, could you pull off in time? Because the second one is much taller. Could you pull off in time and not have to do this, the second one? And you could. We found out that we could. So that was
you
very
proved
comforting
every
for me.
Mistake. You proved every mistake you could make that you could do it. You were like, okay, can I stop before? Can I case the first one? Check. Can I case the first one and then stop before I go into the second one? Because they're really close together. Check. Okay.
Check.
Can I case the first one and then pull off to the side instead of going over the second one? Check.
Check.
I was like, okay, there's nothing you can't do wrong on these doubles. Like, apparently you can't. It's impossible to get hurt on these things.
That's so
true. But they're big. They're really big. And for, you know, there was no one there leading us through. There was no one there showing us how to do it. And so you were guinea pigging it. Like, you were the guy. You were the first one to say, like, oh, we can break here. Oh, we can case this. Oh, we can pull off to the side. And so that was really valuable for Stick and I watching that and for you. But it, That takes guts. It takes guts to start charging at something like that. So, you know, kudos to you for sure.
No, the kudos goes to you because I may have gone first, but you actually ended up clearing all them. Like no cases.
I felt bad about that. I felt bad about that because you were casing the crap out of those things. And then what, second try, second, third, and fourth try, I was just clearing them. And, you know, I just understand the jumping mechanics a little bit more. You know, I just understand that boosting a little bit more. I had a hard time committing to the speed. You have to really come in rocking and rolling. And you have to come in with a lot of speed out of the last berm. I'm not great at holding speed in berms. I'm practicing. I'm getting better at that. So I could get those a little bit cleaner. I felt like I had a little bit of a case on a couple of them, but it didn't slow me down enough to get the second one. So it was, and you know what? It's really fun when you start getting doubles, like the ones you get on Dean's Full Around, you know, like when you get them in the rhythm of that, of the trail, the way that they're designed, it's really fun. It's like a rhythm jump. I've never done rhythm jumps. You know, any of our listeners that get into the dirt jumping and do the rhythm jumps, like you see at bike parks where it's just like jump, 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 jump. Be like on dirt jumpers or BMX bikes.
Yeah.
That looks like so much fun. So
yeah,
RideAndLaugh1@gmail.com. We haven't thrown out the Gmail and told people to comment on anything specifically yet, but what about jumping doubles? Do you find, are you good at that? Do you find that different than other types of jumps? And does anyone do the rhythm jumps? You know, with any kind of tips, any sorts of suggestions for Sage as he gets into jumping and, you know, how to clear these doubles. So why do you think that you weren't clearing it? Do you think you weren't boosting it or you weren't going fast enough?
No, I think I actually think I would have had it. I actually think I would have had it if we had stayed longer. And I also think that I'm going to get it the next time we're there because I don't plan on stopping. Yeah. Like I think if we just catch it in the flow of the ride.
If you get it in the flow of the ride, you think you'll be
better. Yeah. The problem with the way that we were doing it is we were getting three tries and then it was like, okay, now your turn. And so the guy that, you know, just got done the three tries is now filming and the legs are, you know, the mental and the legs are just kind of gone. And then you have to go back up to the top and kind of start over.
You did more than three.
I definitely do more than three. Yeah, for sure. But you have those breaks in between and that's
for sure.
That's not helpful, you know? And so being able to catch us in the flow of the ride, not think about it. Cause that's another thing that bothers me when I start to overthink things and I sessioning does that for me. So no, the next time I go there, I think I'm going to get it. I almost had it the one time. I was pretty close. I cleared the first one and just barely cased the second. So
yeah,
I think really it's close. There.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
It's totally happening. I mean, I'm so, so excited for you. I'm so stoked for you. Like full on jumping. I mean, it's only April. So full on jumping is happening this summer. The bike parks are opening soon. Yeah. I can't wait. And I still can't help but think like if you were on a different bike, like would that level you up jump wise? If it was a little bit slacker, a little bit poppier, you know, maybe, I don't know. I mean, I feel really good on this Specialized Evo and it's slack as hell, man. And it feels really good on the jumps. So,
I mean, talk about feeling good on that Evo. The last feature that we did, I don't think I've ever seen you do that so cleanly and so confidently. You got to tell everybody about this one.
Well, so this is a slab that we call Carla on the, it's one of the Cheers series of slabs. Carla was a waitress on this show years ago, but this is one of the harder slabs on the mountain that we're aware of. We've done it a number of times, but it's really steep. Like you're not stopping steep. And the difficult part about it is that it's two slabs that there's a transition. And the second slab is even steeper than the first one. And you have to get off at an angle because if you go straight, there's a big giant boulder that's kind of like just a wall of rock, like maybe like 3 feet high, that if you were to run into that and be about Sage's height and weight, that it would perfectly flip you over the boulder and into the rocks underneath. Do you know anything about that, Sage? Would you say, is that an experiment that you've ever tried? So Sage does this one first. I learned, if you haven't seen Drunk on Confidence, which is like our second or third show, when I was riding all these slabs so well that Sage offered to do one first, and I was like, no, I got this. And then I totally took a terrible tumble on it. So anytime he wants to go first now, I'm like, go for it, dude. You know, yeah. The universe taught me that lesson. Yeah. So he said, I'll do it first. And I watched you do it. And you were going so slow and so controlled that you actually lost control. You went so slow that your tires started to you brake too much. Your tires stopped rolling and you started to skid. And once you start skidding, you've lost control. If those wheels are not turning, then you don't really have control anymore as far as making the turn when you want to. So you can explain what was going through your head. It's because you were talking, you were calm, and then it all went really sideways really quickly. What happened?
Yeah, I watched the video meticulously because I really wanted to see what happened.
If you're on YouTube right now, I'm assuming the video will be edited in right now, because I haven't seen it. I haven't seen the video yet, so I'll be curious to see this as well. Yeah.
But you were absolutely right. I was in full control. I don't think I was skidding. I watched a video that the tire wasn't skidding. When I got to the bottom of that second slab, my wheel literally slips on the... It's really going to be hard to explain.
Also called a skid. Okay. Yeah. I wasn't skidding. I was slipping.
Yeah. I mean, how would you describe this, like, that portion, though? So, like, after the second slab, you have to make this turn to the left. And it's really difficult because the boulder that's right next to it kind of juts out at an angle. It's off camber. And so you have to like literally lean the bike into this to make that turn. And when my front tire touched down, you can literally see it slip out. And that was it. Once it started slipping, I couldn't recover because it's so steep. And then I just ended up rolling down the...
Yeah.
No, the video does not do it justice. Yeah. No, it does not.
Yeah. So then you ended up hitting the boulder and flipping over it.
I didn't flip.
Right? Like,
I didn't flip. I didn't flip.
Oh, you didn't? In my memory, you flipped over it like an old Western movie. Like you got punched and like flipped over the table. Yes. I was recording it, so I was looking through the phone and I just had this memory of you flipping over the boulder. I guess it didn't. Yeah. I guess it didn't happen that way. No, which is why you're like not hurt.
Yeah, that was I somehow.
You were upside down though. I know that.
Oh my gosh, it was a terrible fall, and it was one of those that I couldn't stop. Like it's so steep that once you start rolling, you know, that's it.
Yeah.
So I got unclipped, thankfully, and found the only spot that had the rocks. I don't understand how I walked away from that, but I'm falling.
Awesome.
And the minute that I stopped falling, I looked at Dan and I'm like, I'm okay. You know, like I don't know how it happened. And let me go back up and do this thing again. And I went up and did it again in even better control. And then ended up eating it at the bottom.
That's right. Well, that wasn't your fault. There was a piece of trail out, right?
Yeah, there was a rock out and I had not inspected the trail all the way at the bottom.
Yeah.
So at the very end, there's like a ramp down and one of the rocks was out of place. And so the line that I normally take, I just, you know, I was so thrilled by
it. It stays gnarly, everyone. You're not going to be able to tell from the video, but you get off of the slab part and then it stays gnarly. It's like kind of like a rocky berm after that. And then just, And then like a rock garden. And then there's a little jump feature at the end, which I missed. I didn't even have my eyes up on it. It's inconsequential, but it's part of the line. So I didn't see that piece that was out. You had already, you did your first run and fell. You did your second run successfully and then like lost control at the end. And then Stick fixed the rock before I ever got to it. Was it so bad that it was unrideable? Or do you think if you had better control at that point, you could have just ridden through that smoother?
I think if I had taken the line higher, I think we would have been fine. But, you know, I like I said, I was just so thrilled for clearing that first, but, you know, getting that injury marker out of the way that I wasn't even thinking about the rest of the line. And I didn't fall, but it definitely knocked me off my line.
I say that to anyone doing that line is don't forget there's still more ride to do after you get off the slab.
Yes.
Like, don't let your guard down. It's still really hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think it's harder than Sam Malone, hands down. Like it is.
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a really, it might be, I want to say it's double black, but I don't know. I mean, if Sam Malone's a black, then this has to be a double black. There's just so many moves.
Yeah.
There's so many moves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, the GoPro will make it look flat.
I know. But I would say it's a double black too. And, you know, it's hard to throw those kind of terms out, you know, arbitrarily, but I would say it's a double black. It's really hard. It's a high consequence. You know, you're really, really fortunate that you didn't fall into rocks, you know, because you fall hard when you fall at those speeds. When you're that steep, you fall hard. I feel like a lot of the steep stuff I was doing in Arizona on Boulder Dash, just kind of, and I went through that line two or three times, maybe it was three times, I think, when I was out there, and just like starting to get like really comfortable with those angles and that steepness. And it just put some confidence in, just like doing the skinnies more than once, just doing steeps, you know, just started to get more confidence. And then we've been riding Mount Penn. It's not like we've been going to easy places lately. Like, we haven't been doing any cross country rides. We've just been riding Mount Penn, partly because it's been raining and Mount Penn is all rocks. So we can always find rocky trails there without ruining anything. I felt really in control and good, and I had no problems with it. So
yeah, I don't know. And I hadn't done that in a really long time. That was so impressive, man.
Yeah. But we wanted to do it. We've been talking about doing that for a while. So and you know why we wanted to do it. I don't know. I mean, that's a subject for another episode, I think, of why we are pushing ourselves to do these things. It's a really, really interesting point that your buddy Anthony brought up, that why we enjoy doing some of these like really dangerous things. But that's another pod. RideAndLaugh1@gmail.com or comment on the YouTube about any sort of steep things that you guys have ridden. Listener, anything that you've ridden, that, you know, what's your technique for riding steeps? And, you know, have you had a nasty fall? Do you get right back up and do it again? And, you know, and do you like getting better at those things? You know, how much do you practice those things? RideAndLaugh1@gmail.com and comment in the YouTube.
Yeah.
With that said, let's move into our mountain bike gratitudes of the week. Always, always fun, always easy to come up with, because there's so much to be appreciative of in mountain bike world. So Sage, what is your mountain bike gratitude of the week?
Man, you're right. There's so much to be grateful for. But being that I just crashed on Carla, it brought up a thing that I wanted to just be grateful for: all the people that help the mountain bikers out. And I remember when you had that crash at Powder Ridge, and the paramedics that just came out. They came out with these like four-wheelers and, you know, just the rescue teams, you know, that come out to go get riders, you know, and the people at the ER staff. I am just so grateful for those folks. They do so much. It's a thankless job, because everyone that's hurt isn't like, oh, thank you for help. It's usually like, I'm in so much pain, you know, and then you never see them again. You never see them again, you know? Yeah. So I'm saying thank you to all those men and women that are out there every day doing it and getting and rescuing people and helping people in need.
First responders.
First responders. Yes. So that's my gratitude.
Do you have any direct experience with first responders other than them rescuing me while you were watching?
Yeah.
Do you have any direct experience?
I do. I have been hurt. I cut my wrist really bad when I was a young boy, and I almost died. It's really bad.
That was an ambulance situation.
Yeah. They had to come get me. And I was in the woods. It was bad. Oh. It was really bad. Yeah. I cut my artery, and it was just, I literally could have died. Yeah. It was insane. It was insane. But
Yeah.
Thank goodness for all those men and women.
This wasn't a first responder story, but years and years and years ago, actually it was so long ago that the mountain bikes still had the front derailleur, and they still had the three chain rings.
The three by,
the three by. So this is and I was riding it with Wissahickon, which is the in-city park in Philadelphia, and there's a climb up right after Valley Green. You can climb up into the trails from Forbidden Drive. It's a really long climb. This is years and years and years ago, and I had never gotten it before, and And I decided I was going to climb up it. I must have been on a full suspension bike, or maybe it might have been a hardtail. I don't even know. But I know that it had three gears on the front. And this is why, because when I got to the top, I was new to being clipped in. And when I got to the top, I was so exhausted that I stopped and I was clipped in and I didn't unclip and I just started to fall over. And somehow the big chain ring that did not have a chain on it, the chain was on in one of the other rings, the big chain ring, which was exposed, just ended up like somehow digging into my inner thigh and just like, made this awful gash on my inner thigh. And I was just laying, clipped into the bike, laying there, like staring at this horrible wound that just had just come out of nowhere. And this guy walks by and I was like, I think I need to go to the hospital. And I said, he said, well, I have a truck. And I was like, all right, I'll sit in the bed of your truck. And he was like, no. And he took me to his truck and he said, he put a towel down and he sat me inside and he took me to my truck, which I asked him to. And then I drove to the hospital, but like this just total stranger just put me in his truck. You know, so nice. I thought he was going to put me in the back. It was too nice. So I was like, I don't want to sit in the front. So yeah, well that's a great one. First responders, you can't go wrong. My mountain bike gratitude of the week is going to be mountain bike culture. So I told the story a couple weeks ago, how I got a flat tire in Arizona when I went off that drop and I thought that maybe the saddlebag had crushed the tire. Remember that theory?
Which you said
was not possible, but nonetheless, I was like in the desert, you know, with a flat tire, and I was on South Mountain, and that's a pretty popular trail. It was a weekday and still not a ton of people out. But let me tell you, I was out there, you know, I tried to fix it and then I put a tube in. So I was out there for a little bit and I got to say probably 8 or 9 riders came by. Every single person, do you have everything you need? Do you need anything?
Yes.
Can I help you? Every single person. And I know I always say that when I pass someone and I've given tubes away and I've helped people put, you know, bacon into flats and, you know, usually everyone's prepared, but, and I didn't need anything. I had everything I needed, but man, it's just like, it's such a cool culture. And then at the same time, you know, a week or two later on last week's pod, we talked about meeting Hunter and Sawyer in the parking lot and then wanting us to show them lines. And we're like, yeah, come on the ride with us.
Yeah.
You know, it's
absolutely
mountain bike culture, you know, like it's just such nice people doing things that they love and it brings out the best in people. And mountain bikers are awesome. If you're listening to this and you're a mountain biker, you're awesome and we appreciate you. But I absolutely love the mountain bike culture and all the friends that we've met doing this. And there's just so many cool people that are out riding their bikes and loving it. So that's my gratitude of the week. So thank you everybody that stops and says, do you need anything? Or can you show me a line? Or, you know, or thanks for showing me where that trailhead is. Or tell me about that slab that you found. You know, it's just, I love it. I love mountain biking. I love mountain bikers. Obviously, we do a podcast. So what do you got for, go ahead, Sage. You have something to add?
I was going to say, I was going to go right into the tips because my tip is kind of related to your story and also my story. And the mountain bike tip is if you are riding somewhere,
you never know.
You never know when you're going to get invited into someone's truck. and don't get in.
Oh, that could have gone really wrong. I didn't think about it that way. Yeah. Yeah. It could have been the end of it.
Mountain bike tip is, and I learned this the hard way when we were at Powder Ridge, and that is if you're going to a bike park, get the number to the front desk, because if something happens, I had no idea who to call. I called 911. They're like, where are you? I'm like, I'm at Powder Ridge. They're like, yeah, the phone number. I'm like, no. They're like, do you know what trail you're on? I'm like, no. I mean, it was just like, so be as prepared as possible. If you're going to bike park, make sure you have the bike park number because they're the first people that are going to be able to get to you. You know, it's not going to be the paramedics. Bike parks typically have their own rescue system. And so being able to get to them first is really crucial. And if you're not at a bike park, know where all the local hospitals are. Know where you are in terms of like what the name of the place is that you're at. Try and have trail forks ready to go so that you can tell somebody I'm on this trail. Google Maps, you can drop a pin. All these things. Just try and be prepared as possible, because you never know when something goes wrong. And when it goes wrong, you often can't think right. Like, I was panicking when you went down. You could, I'm listening to the video. I hear myself. I'm just like, oh my gosh, oh my God. You know, like, your brain's just not thinking right. And so I couldn't like put two and two together. So writing those things down, being prepared, really makes a huge difference when things hit the fan.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of a morbid way to go into anything, but really it's the nature of our sport. You just have to be prepared. I mean, it's a good idea to be prepared in life, really, but it's some really, really good points. It's unfortunate that, you know, it's a high consequence kind of thing that happens. And look, you don't have to do things. You don't have to ride bike parks and you don't have to push limits. You know, there's no reason, you don't have to get hurt doing this. So if you're listening and you're kind of a new rider and you're like, geez, these guys are scaring the shit out of me. You know, you don't have to be as dumb as us. I mean, we keep saying, you know, we don't get injured all the time. And then every podcast we come on and talk about the latest crash. So much so that your non-mountain biking friend at dinner last night was like, so why are you doing this? Well, yes. I don't understand why you keep trying things that you crash on. And instead of agreeing with him, we were like, that's a good podcast idea. We should talk about that. Of course, he's crazy. We would never stop doing it. I don't know. It's a different episode. It's a different episode. I mean, I couldn't.
Totally different.
There's so many reasons, but it's just fun. It's fun. Yeah. We love it. It's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, progression is fun. So, well, if you're still listening to this, I hope you enjoy this episode. We're all over the place, but we had a lot of fun talking about it. You know, this is what we say. Sage and I would be talking about this stuff anyway. And we love sharing any sort of tips or the stories that have happened, our successes, our failures. And we want to hear about your successes and your failures and any feedback you have or input or anything that you want to talk about us to talk about on future pods. We definitely consider the Ride and Laugh community. We have like regular commenters now, people that are commenting and on the YouTube and also on Gmail. So that's awesome. And if you're one of the people that just loves to listen and doesn't comment, that's totally cool. I'm not a guy who ever called into a radio show or leaves a lot of comments or anything like that myself. So I get it. YouTube's a little bit different. It's so easy to comment. It's kind of fun to get involved. So go ahead and make your voice heard. But if you're just listening, that we really appreciate it. We're really excited how well the podcast is doing. So go ahead and rate and subscribe to Ride and Laugh Podcast on YouTube, and rate and subscribe and set your auto downloads on your podcast player. If you can leave a review on Spotify or iTunes, that really helps. That helps the algorithm get us out to more people. And so more riding, more laughing, more stoke. That's what we want. If you're still listening, you're one of us. I already said all the stuff about rating and subscribing, so I'm going to wrap it up. Thank you very much. Everyone have a great week. Ride and laugh.
I'll see you, everyone.